B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
They get you going.
That's a difficult thing to get through.
Every day.
That is 4 hours of conversation.
Toucher and Rich on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, it is time for us to do a public service for the people.
Let's do it, Dan.
No.
Who don't drink in Rocklahoma?
Your.
Who else in the local car say yeah?
Armpits of America.
They cut my beard and forced me to eat it.
It is true. Rich has a list of stories. He will tell us a story. He will give us a couple options of where that story took place. We'll guess, and then we will hear the story. Rich, what do you got?
By the way, in that opening, the Who Don't Drink at Rocklahoma, Rocklahoma has lost its soul. The lineup just came out, and it's like a legitimate rock concert. It used to be just all, like, hair bands that basically couldn't finish their sets because they were vomiting on their shoes or were too old and couldn't move. And unfortunately, now it's like Slipknot, which is, you know, a band that could sell out or do extremely well if they came to the Xfinity Center. I don't. Nobody wants that. You want to see the guys from Dokken not be able to do an entire set standing up and having to sit on stools by the end of it, which I actually saw in person. So it stinks. They've completely lost their soul.
A friend of mine had sent me an email with a show that has the spirit of Rocklahoma.
It does, and it's in a place that just seems like almost it was willed into existence. Like it, like when that city was made of Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Like the, it just the town came with that festival. They rose out of the ground and said, "I give you Night Ranger, Kicks." Oh, Vince Neil, which, by the way, Vince Neil, you know, he played the one where he walked off stage because he couldn't finish and his voice was gone. He canceled his second show on the day, like, of that tour on the day of, and nobody knows why. There's been no explanation. So things are going swimmingly for Vince Neil, and I'm sure he would have been completely ready to go if they had a tour. Maybe that's the reason that they moved back the tour till next year, Fred, is that they realized Vince Neil, not so good.
Yeah, it's Night Ranger, Vince Neil, Kicks, Gilby Clark, Bullet Boys, Rhino Bucket.
See, now we're talking.
That is what you come to see.
All right. Well, I will give you a true story from somewhere happened, then something that happened in an armpit of America. You just tell me where it is when I give you the multiple choice. A family claimed that they just might have buried the wrong body at their father's funeral. Did that happen in Michigan, Wisconsin, or South Dakota?
Oh, man. Florida is usually a layup for these things.
So South Dakota doesn't have a lot of people, so maybe that would. But why would Rich think of the state South Dakota? So I'm going to go with South Dakota. Who is ever? If you're going to name 50 states, South Dakota is the 50th.
That's true. That's true. But to be different, what are the other two choices?
Michigan and Wisconsin.
I'll go Wisconsin.
You're both wrong. Let's go to Fred's old stomping grounds, Michigan.
The Mitten.
Let's see what happened.
The loss of a loved one is never easy.
We're all very sad, all very distraught.
But the family of Larry Tillman says when they stepped into the Lawrence E. Moon Funeral Home in Pontiac on Tuesday, their sadness turned to disbelief.
Everyone knew that that wasn't our father. Even as we're walking in, the people that knew him said, you know, tell them to put your father in the casket because that's not your father.
Okay, this seems like this could have been rectified much earlier.
Immediately.
But yeah, before people started coming in, you could have said, this is not my father. This is an open casket, and this is not the right person. You know, because, by the way, like, if this doesn't get to the wake or whatever open casket situation it is, it's, like, not the world's biggest deal. Like, if they bring someone out, and then you're like, and it's just...
Oops, wrong guy.
Yeah, and you're like, hey, that's not my father. What the hell? And they're like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And then they go get your father. Like, this seems like they let it ride for a really long time.
You don't even know how long.
I mean, this should have, before the doors opened, you should have said,
they should look,
this isn't
all
my father.
Yes.
Like, it's not even that big a mess up, because if they have a bunch of dead bodies there, it's not even that, like, crazy a mess up if you're like, oh, no, that's not my father.
Oh, yeah, you're the Jones funeral at 3:30.
Yes, yeah, right. Like, we have, like, five of these today. Okay, yes, I'm so sorry. That's, you know, very traumatic. We'll take half off, you know, and then you go, okay, fine. Just please, could we have my father come out? So, again, this isn't the craziest story in terms of the funeral home. This seems to be already on the family, but let's hear.
Spencer, who was sitting next to his wife for support, says he knew immediately something was wrong.
Just from the way that he looked, there were facial features that he had that wasn't there.
The family said,
yeah, it wasn't your father.
From the way, you see, you don't have to describe it. You're his son. You know what your dad
looks
like.
I like how he's like, there were certain facial features that weren't the same. Well, okay, then it wasn't your father.
Well, you see, I'm black, and he was a white guy.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So that would have been, that was the first hint.
Yeah, I'll tell you, my father was a dwarf, but this guy was 6'2".
This guy looks pretty tall. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're explaining a bunch of ways that there was differences.
Unless after he died, he grew a porn star mustache.
Well, that can happen. I mean, everyone knows you defecate and then you grow a mustache.
Features that he had that wasn't there.
The family says they're not sure whose body was placed in the casket, so they demanded answers from the funeral home.
We kept saying, this is not Larry Tillman. Is there some type of mix-up?
Spencer says despite their doubt, they proceeded with the funeral and burial.
We proceeded with the funeral the best way we could.
Right. Okay. That's on you. Okay, come on.
Okay,
they don't want to make waves. Good for them.
Here's the point you have to ask. Whose body is it?
What are you doing?
Like you buried somebody else's body.
Listen, not all of the people out there, you two jerks, are complaining to the manager about every little thing.
We're here to be sad. We don't want to come back and do another day of this.
I mean, imagine being like, hey, I think that there's a different body other than ours. All right, we'll deal with it after it's buried. All right, let's get on with it.
We'll sift through all the corpses after.
Oh, we're sorry, sir. We're going to have to charge you double. We're going to do this again.
What, do you want me to dig up the whole cemetery now? I mean, come on.
With what we knew from what they were saying at the time, we proceeded with the funeral best that we could. No, we did not mourn. We didn't cry. We were just like living in the Twilight Zone. We did watch them lower the body into the ground.
Well, I gotta stop. What could they have possibly said that made it okay to continue with these? Like, you know, judging by what they had told us, you know, we thought we would continue to move on. Like, what could anyone have said?
It was the lighting. They didn't know. Right. The whole point of watching the body go into the ground is for the living. So I would assume if it's like, why even go? I mean, it's just some random dude getting buried. Like, why even stand there? There's no sense of finality that comes with it. There's nothing. It's just kind of a creep watching some stranger get buried.
And I'm wondering, where's the second family complaining? Like, where's the family of the guy that you buried?
There you go.
Well, I think that they sniffed a lawsuit and said, everyone keep quiet. We got some suing going on. Or we're going to be on TV.
Right.
Fox 2 contacted the funeral home, and we received a statement from their attorney, which reads, the allegations are false, malicious, and not true. We investigated the allegations, and absolutely not true. Fox 2 also contacted the Oakland County Sheriff's Office, and they tell us that they were contacted, but it's the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs, LARA, that would have to serve as the investigative unit.
You know, Oakland County is one of the richest counties in all of America, and I'm not making that up.
Really?
Yeah. It's, but Pontiac's in it, so.
I just love how we have to figure out a way to conclude this investigation. There's an easy way. Bury it up, dig it up, find out if it's your dad or not.
Well, then that would cause problems for the lawsuit that's coming their way.
We reached out to Laura and were told there is no prior disciplinary history for this funeral home. There is an open investigation associated with this license. It is not related to the wrong body in the casket. We cannot comment further. Tillman family says they won't give up and are reaching out to an attorney to help them find closure.
We just want to get answers. We want to get down to the bottom. The most important thing is finding out where my father is, finding out where his body is. improperly burying him.
In Pontiac, Ingrid Kelly, Fox 2 News.
No holes in that story. No holes.
Did they say that there was a second investigation that was happening, but it wasn't related to it being the wrong body?
Yes.
Like, what else went wrong?
I don't know. If you're a mortician or you're a funeral home, you probably got a bunch of people complaining about all kinds of crap. I mean, you're dealing with people at their lowest. I mean, you got to figure that it's a tough racket. I mean, you know, a
lot of competition. Gotta make sure it's
a tough racket. I mean, you got to deal with people that are mourning loved ones all the time. Yeah. I'm sure that there's complaints all over the place. I'm not being facetious either. I would imagine that, you know, there's a lot of complaining. I mean,
you know what I'm 1,000% not a fan of? Open casket funerals. I hate them. When my father died, I'm like, close that thing. No way. I don't want to see it. I don't want anyone to see it. And being at one, like, of somebody that you knew, like, it's like you know, when your wife goes in to give birth, eyes up, you know, you don't look down. I never want to see that.
They put my grandmother in a room, and they were like, all right, you're in here for the next 8 hours. I don't know what the hell was going on. It was just 8 hours. It was the longest 8 hours of my life. And then my grandfather came in there and started flipping out, and then which you never saw. So there was that. But then that happened, and then there was like 6 more hours of like sitting there.
Oh yeah.
And you're making conversation at this funeral home. It's really stupid. There's no alcohol. There's no refreshments or anything. You're just like, and when I say there's no alcohol, is because you know. Could have at least cut some of the tension. So you're just in this silent-ass room. It was terrible. Yeah, I don't know why that happened. I don't know why that goes on.
Yeah, open caskets, I am nope. Don't want any of that. I don't think anybody wants to be remembered that way. Like, their last vision of someone. And on top of that, they sometimes the mortician gets them all waxy and stuff like that.
It's you got to find a good makeup artist. But, cremated is the way to go. I'm telling you. And then,
no question.
And then you can juggle the, especially with this COVID stuff, they were able, I have a couple of relatives who died over COVID, not from it, but over COVID, the course of COVID, and they've been able to push these funerals back till this summer, so now people can go to the funerals because the bodies were cremated. I told you my grandmother on my dad's side, a box of her ashes were in my parents' closet for 2 years, and then they finally found a date where everyone could get together and do it. So that's the way to go. I'm being cremated. I can tell you that much.
Oh yeah, no question. It's so easy. By the way,
dump my ashes on Fenway Park.
Yes. Well, then there's Crash's mom, who they put it inside the river,
world.
And it's a small world. Yeah. Which, by the way, it happened so many times that Disney had to release a statement saying, "Please do not put your family member's ashes in the water." And it's a small world. Imagine just subjecting if you believe in afterlives. So she's living in a constant hell of hearing that song over and over and over and over again. Mm. Might be the worst place you could put it. And then everyone puts their hand in the water.
Well, all of the scattering of the ashes and all this stuff, that's all for the living. So, I mean, if that's what made Crash very happy. Everyone knows he loves Disney. He met the love of his life at Disney. Everyone, he loves Disney. There's no question about it. He goes all the time. Meets the love of his life. All right, we were talking about this book, Can't Knock the Hustle, and the more I investigate this book, the more I am interested to talk to this Matt Sullivan fella. He is the author of Can't Knock the Hustle, Inside the Season of Protest, Pandemic, and Progress with the Brooklyn Nets Superstars of Tomorrow. It seems to me, I would like to talk to him, it seems to me he's a huge fan of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
Well, and you find out that they were planning to be together and leaving the Celtics well before any of us thought that they were.
That's true, but I also think this book might be a celebration of these gentlemen, and I would like to know why. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
What's up? They've got the insiders.
Mr. Jaffe, hello, sir.
Insiders.
Maybe you know something. I doubt it.
No, I don't know anything.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You lately have been scaring the hell out of Celtics fans because of all the talk about you possibly wanting to go and leave to go to the Knicks after this is all done and over with. Please.
Which is easy to kind of follow. I'm from New Jersey, you know, but it's also just a rumors. Say, which is, you know, it's like the timing. I go from a trade to now going to free agency. Like, oh, who is he getting traded to? And now it's like, where is he going? So it's like, yeah, you know, it's easy to draw that connection in New York City. But honestly, you know, why would I want to leave here?
Yeah, 1-2-1-2. 985
The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Reg.
Matt, to my face, Fred, lying right to my face, Kyrie Irving. Now it's personal.
Hard to get over that. Matt Sullivan has written a book about inside the season of protest, pandemic, and progress with the Brooklyn Nets. Superstars of Tomorrow. The book is called Can't Knock the Hustle. Now, this book was brought to our attention yesterday by John, so obviously I have not had a chance to read the book, so I do have some questions for Matt. Matt Sullivan on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, thank you for joining us, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good morning.
All right, so first of all, just the genesis of this book, the reasoning why this team, when it all started, give us the rundown on that.
Well, I think there was that day in 2019, I think Woj from ESPN called it the, quote, clean sweep. And, you know, you've got KD, Kyrie, DeAndre Jordan claiming they've had some 4 a.m. magical phone call at the last minute before free agency. But really, this whole super team was building since 2018 and into early 2019 when Ty kind of got not sick of Boston, but maybe sick of himself. And as I kind of reveal in the book, the KD recruitment really coalesced earlier than has been out there in January 2019, over wine, over vegan burgers, over vegan smoothies and video games up in Boston at a dinner. And KD was basically done with the Warriors, so he basically decided to go to Brooklyn while he was still playing in the finals with them. And that's when I started embedding with the Brooklyn Nets here in NYC for what became a pretty insane 2019-2020 season, an endless one, really.
In the excerpt that you wrote yesterday, I'm fascinated by it. He seemed to intimate that there was an issue with the Boston Celtics. It wasn't just as much that he wanted to go play somewhere else, but he seemed to have had issues with the team. Were you able to explore any of that and what some of those issues might have been?
I mean, I think I basically found out that his issues with some of the younger guys, you know, Jalen and Jason were real, but so was the stuff going inside his head coming out of that bad knee injury in the summer of 18, right? He goes to Vegas with KD and their entourages. He goes to Seattle to rehab at these secret pickup games with guys like Zach LaVine from the Bulls. And then one day, who shows up in the bleachers at these secret pickup games but Bill Russell? So they talk about Boston, they talk about race, and we can get into that in a second. But then he goes to the Standing Rock Reservation, right, where he kind of sets his spirit straight with his Sioux roots. And let's just say Kyrie's been direct messaging me on Instagram with like 67-page Supreme Court decisions on indigenous land rights. Anyway, Ty promises the fans up there in Boston to sign an extension, and then his grandfather dies, right? So that, he ended up telling KD, is when, quote, anything I was doing in basketball, I didn't really care. And like that, poof, he was done with Boston.
Okay, so let's talk. Okay, you bring up a ton of interesting stuff there, Matt. All right, so the Bill Russell is in Seattle. He talks to Kyrie, and Bill Russell, obviously, millions of problems in Boston. Not easy to be black and in Boston, especially at that time. And so what was that conversation like? What have you heard about that conversation?
Well, Mr. Russell, shall we call him, would kind of pull up some of these all-stars from around the league and have almost a campfire session just right there by the bleachers. Sometimes it'd be a couple minutes, and then Mr. Russell would come back the next day and the next day, and it might be for a few hours. And they would go into, you know, how he went on the buses and the Freedom Rides back in the 60s. But, you know, then Kai and Bill would, you know, kind of pull aside and have real talk about the Celtics. And, you know, we know that Bill wrote in his book, you know, I think of myself as playing for the Celtics, not for Boston. And you know, a friend of Kyrie who was on that trip with me, you know, told me that the power shift was going on in Boston with Jalen and Jason, you know, wanting shots, wanting time. But the friend also told me that Ty realized, quote, wait a minute, I'm trying to champion Boston, but now that I'm looking at the history of Boston, is this a city that I want to champion in terms of their racial history and stuff like that? Is Boston the type of place I want to represent? So that gets into a lot of the discussions we've been having this season, right? That Kai is kind of teed up in terms of race, in terms of fans, and that dynamic, which, you know, I think really began in his head in that heady summer of 2018, and is still playing out today. He's not afraid to provoke. We all know that.
All right. Wow, so let me ask, I have one question. Matt, okay. I just have one question for Matt, and then I will relax for the rest of the interview. All right, so Kyrie Irving is obviously interested in a lot of things. He has a lot of things to say. But you hear about him. He found out about his native heritage. He has a conversation with Bill Russell and makes him not want to live in the city. Just in your dealing with Kyrie, do you think he's smart?
I think he thinks he's smart.
Okay.
I went to Duke with him. He's certainly well read. Whether that's kind of heebie-jeebie conspiracy-oriented things or, you know, really interesting black history. I think he's not afraid to push what the history books should say, and he's not afraid to provoke, obviously, with the earth being flat, which is kind of how he does his thing. He thinks he's smart enough to provoke a conversation beyond the game.
Okay, so were you impressed by him, like, when you talked to him? Because again, this is a guy who has a platform and he's talking about a lot of stuff, and it doesn't always seem like he has the firmest grasp on it.
It's a little all over the place, right? We would have these kind of heady conversations in the locker room when everybody's asking him X's and O's. He goes on and on. I think his friends and his agency, et cetera, worry that he's kind of off message, to say the least, but he's not very clear. And so, you know, I detailed the whole trip to China over that tweet about democracy that he and LeBron's Lakers were on at the beginning of last crazy season, seems like ages ago. And Kyrie kind of wanted to speak out. And then when he did, he was just talking about problems all over the world and we want unity. And that was the beginning of his kind of education and activism that went through the protests last summer. But he's not very, you know, well articulated, despite being a smart Dookie.
Right. So do you think that Bill Russell's 6 months Duke? Okay.
No disrespect to the education at Duke, which is excellent.
Hard to get that when you're not there for very long.
He was not there for very long.
No, definitely. So this Bill Russell conversation that they had. So I mean, it's interesting when you think of the greatest Celtic of all time potentially being responsible for Kyrie Irving leaving this team. Do you think that was the intention of the conversation by bringing up the racial things that he had to deal with? Do you think that was his Bill Russell's intention?
I think Kai's roots back home were really what was pulling him. And, you know, his dad grew up in the Bronx and his family was growing. He wanted to have another kid, which he recently had a son. He wanted to build a house for his family and really control a franchise, you know, and I think Boston as a city maybe felt out of his grasp. And so, you know, we've seen the Zapruder film of him and KD talking about two max slots, right? But the conversation really dated before that to, you know, two best basketball friends who really wanted to take control of a franchise. I think we've talked a lot about player empowerment, and that probably had more to do with it than Bill Russell and him, you know, talking race in the 60s and black history back in a gym in Seattle.
Did you ever find out what his impression of ownership was here, or potentially, or Brad Stevens as well?
I don't think Kyrie cares about ownership. I think he thinks he's in control enough to take advantage of ownership, and that's what player empowerment's all about. I will say, you know, I got inside the room with Kyrie and a bunch of All-Stars in the summer of 2019 with none other than Kobe Bryant, RIP, and, you know, they're talking kind of on the side, and I got to hear a bit of that conversation. And, you know, they're talking about Brad Stevens, and they're talking about coaches. And Kyrie kind of gets pulled aside, and they're talking about how superstars had no excuse to settle for, you know, quote, mediocre coaches. And Kyrie kind of mumbles under his breath, "I've had a handful of those." And, you know, Kobe talks over him, you know, to try to kind of get him to mature. It talks about how Phil Jackson had ultimately succeeded with this kind of figure it out creativity among players instead of kind of rule bound Brad Stevens stuff. And Kobe says to him, if it's the coach giving you strict rules, rules are easy to beat. Right. And at the end of the day, you do it, you figure it out, you win, and the coach gets paid. You're welcome, man. So I think that's kind of the philosophy that they shared, that Kobe passed on to Kyrie as a kind of immature guy. But I think, you know, Kyrie came to a situation where he could control the franchise. He and KD could control the coach. And Kenny Atkinson here in Brooklyn had his, you know, feelers up. He was a little worried that he was kind of going to be controlled and ultimately definitely forced out by those two big dogs.
That's fascinating to me. So, you know, it's one thing that we've noticed is that even amongst the Celtics now, who he played with, they love Kyrie Irving. And, you know, even with all the way that he left and all the things that he's said, I mean, they didn't take him stepping on the logo personally, you know, during these playoffs. Do you think that maybe some of the issues or potentially Brad Stevens not being the coach anymore, maybe them not connecting, there was a rumor, not a rumor, but there was talk about how he wasn't connecting with the players anymore. Do you think some of that might have to do with them taking the attitude of Kyrie Irving and possibly feeling the same way he did, that Brad Stevens might have been a mediocre coach?
I think Kyrie is very happy to be sad, happy to tune out for a couple days in the locker room. And, you know, I think he's still tight with Marcus, obviously the Duke connection with Jason. And, you know, sometimes they would allow for him spacing out, going home right after the game, you know, flaking out on the team dinners, you know, not always taking team transportation. But, you know, there was obviously was and to some extent is some beef with Jalen. I'm not sure it had to do with Brad so much as, you know, Kyrie is willing to call out things in the locker room, willing to be despondent in the locker room when he's not happy, including with a coach. And that can be infectious to some extent, but it's really infectious inside of him and makes him kind of come inside himself. You know, people talk about quote unquote mood swings, and he said that's okay, right? And so he'll get inside himself and that might bring down the team. But then when he can go to a franchise that he can control, he's in better spirits here and there. And he's certainly, you know, a friend of the NBA brotherhood and is happy to hug it out with guys. And, you know, water under the bridge is hard to come by when you're that big of a personality. But I don't think he holds ill will to the Celtics. You know, Boston's obviously another story, as he said.
Yeah, all right. So we're talking to Matt Sullivan. Can't Knock the Hustle is the name of the book. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better story than this Nets team, especially you had to be loving what was going on this year, Matt. I mean, Jesus, this really hit a home run for you. So what ultimately do Durant and Kyrie want? Because, do they feel oppressed by white ownership that they're pawns in a game and that, Like, what is the end goal? Because, like you said, Kyrie is very mercurial. He, you know, half knows some things. Durant just seems like someone who's never going to be happy. What is the problem and what is the solution?
They describe it as a feeling, right? Not necessarily chasing a championship, although every NBA player wants that. You know, they've described it as that feeling on the top of the mountain, right? And how do we get back there? How do we get back to the almost top of the mountain? And, you know, they both won championships. They've both been there. They both hit the dagger shots. I think they kind of want to be able to go to that mountaintop on their own terms. And, you know, Steve Nash has this kind of motto, I don't know if this has really been out there that much, for this season. It's called Protect the Group, right? And that's been GM Sean Marks' philosophy here in Brooklyn, too, is to just let the stars be the stars. Give them space. Kenny Atkinson certainly didn't do that. I think Brad's system didn't do that for Kai. And so for them to be isolated together and be able to win and just hoop. You know, honestly, KD is such a straight hooper that I think he would have been fine if fans never came back to the arena this season. You know,
right.
His friend has described to me, like, you put nine other hoopers in a gym with KD, give him a backpack and he'll be just fine.
Yeah, I almost feel bad for Durant because I'm seriously, it just doesn't seem like that anything will satisfy him. You know, he seems like a decent enough guy. He's won these championships. He might be the greatest basketball player in the world. And it just seems that, you know, between what he does on social media, he's always, you know, paying attention to that.
He was upset at Golden State. He's upset here.
Yeah, like, do you...
At everything.
Am I reading that right? Does he seem to you like just someone who's just an unhappy person that might never be satisfied?
He's very much a millennial, and he loves loves basketball, right? I was hanging out at his house one night late. There's some friends of his around. They're talking sneakers. They're smoking weed. And, you know, he's just looking at videos of his Achilles getting better in the gym. And he's pointing at it to me, and he's, you know, getting my muscle memory back. And, you know, that S word made it really difficult to get up. Then I dread going to work every day at the beginning of that Achilles, because he just wanted to get back to the mountaintop too and be in control of his body and just hoop. I think a championship this year on a team that he created, that he started on his own terms, would make him happy. Now, I don't know if the Nets are dead in the water against the Bucks here. They're definitely aging fast. I mean, Brooklyn has this great training and performance group that to some extent also lured KD. But right now, James Harden looks like a 76-year-old man out
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly. True, yeah. He shouldn't really be playing, but or at least, yeah, right.
So you talked about that correspondence you got regarding when Kyrie Irving went to the Native American reservation. What, at all your time you spent with him, what was the biggest WTF moment, either from a correspondence that he gave you or something that he said?
So many contenders.
I'd say it's, you know, the summer where COVID was kind of putting him inside of himself. And, you know, he came back to Kobe's gym, you know, almost as a spiritual renaissance. You know, he tried to get in there after Kobe died just for one final run with the ghost of Kobe. And, you know, the people who were in the gym and Kobe's family were kind of busy with, like, his funeral and not what Kyrie wanted.
Boy.
Which is sad, but it shows kind of the ego on display. And then when he gets back there in that summer, there's some kind of secret runs with KD and some of the guys on the Nets then. And, you know, I think I was surprised that Kai and KD were in the gym right before the bubble, and they were healthy. KD wanted to play in the bubble, and the Nets, being this kind of conservative, you know, basketball operations organization, wouldn't let him go. And meanwhile, you know, Kai is painting Basquiat paintings, beginning with his sage and his meditation and getting back into a lot of that juju. And, you know, he tried to have a kid, which he just did, and really center on, you know, his life. And that's when he really started to, I think, consider basketball just a job, right? And he'll head out and go home. He won't be watching these games when he's hurt. He's home with his newborn, which is cool, but he's just detached. And so, you know, 45 minutes before a game that he's going to play in, he's sending me these, like, Supreme Court documents about indigenous land rights saying, you know, keep the truth alive. And he's just still that guy.
Well, I'm glad he discovered the Supreme Court rulings. Those are very hidden.
Where does he go when he disappears?
Home, alone. You know, there's not a lot of people around him when he wants to be alone. You know, when Kobe died, he just took off, went back to his penthouse in Brooklyn, and, like, his chef was there, and they were watching old Kobe highlights instead of watching the Nets game. So he goes into himself. I mean, he's a good dad. I think he doesn't get enough credit for that. But, you know, he really goes home to his family, because they're the only people he can trust anymore.
All right. Well, Matt Sullivan, it sounds great. I mean, you did a really good job selling the book. It is this book goes on sale June 22nd, which is, what, Tuesday?
Yeah, it might be a bit of a hate read, but trust me, I'm a Knicks fan.
All right. Can't knock the hustle inside the season of protest, pandemic, and progress with the Brooklyn Nets superstars of tomorrow. Thanks so much, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. Go ahead.
Take it easy. All right. That does it. Kyrie's stupid. Yeah. And that's all I wanted out of the interview. Is a smart guy who spent time with the guy.
No, we had it nailed.
Because exactly I thought when I read about the book, I'm like, he's going to come on and he's going to go. Which I would, I mean, he's been around the guy. I haven't.
Clearly.
And I'm like, he's going to come on and he might, and I was telling John off the air, I'm like, he might be like, you know, guys, you don't understand.
He's an intellectual.
He's an intellectual in Boston's this terrible place and da-da-da-da-da. And he's dumb. I knew it.
He thinks he's smart.
He's shilling. And how many times have I said that, Ridge?
Yep.
He's shilling.
Yeah, I mean, you hear him talk enough, and you hear him not be able to follow up questions and just throw things out there and not be able to defend what he says, then that is somebody who just is seeing what sticks to the wall. He heard some catchphrase somewhere and has no idea what he's actually saying.
The way he put it was, he's well-read but not well-versed.
No, well-read could mean...
He's read a bunch of stuff, but not digested
the important things. Conspiracy theories and headlines.
He's well-read the same way I do when I go to my Twitter timeline without clicking on an article.
Can you imagine like a Supreme Court ruling? Like you found it, like, wow, you found it. Like, congratulations. It's a Supreme Court ruling. What do you want Sullivan to do with it? I knew it. Thank God.
The disrespect for Brad Stevens is interesting. The Bill Russell story is wild.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's the greatest Celtic of all time that talked, you know, Kyrie Irving away from being a member of the Celtics, that's interesting to me.
But listen, I don't like Kyrie. Bill Russell's got every right in the world to hate this place. So,
he goes to Kobe's gym right after he dies. Like, yeah. Let me in!
Yeah, because he's a maniac. Because he's a moron. I'll tell you, in Kyrie's stuff with the saging and the sage and the
smudging.
All that stuff. It was funny because I had just come out of where I came out of.
Yep.
It was like someone had read him a headline and he was just picking apart the. Yep. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Like, I just sat through 3.5 weeks of this stuff. Like, you don't even know.
You have no idea what you're talking about. That's right.
I mean, I had these maniacs talking to me for 3.5 weeks, and I just got through a crash course in this stuff.
It was weird. I was actually there that night. That was one of the games I called. I've been watching him do. Like, what is he doing?
Smudging is something people do, whatever, if you believe in it or not. But his reasoning. It's his reasonings. He doesn't know what he's talking about. All right. We'll be back. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
They get you going.
In fairness, we have to make up for not watching the game.
Every day.
I might watch a baking show.
Toucher and Rich.
What do you expect me to do? Watch every basketball game?
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ah, Frank Sinatra. 98.5 the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. So at the beginning of the show every day, not many of you are up at 6 o'clock in the morning. But Rich will usually play a clip or something before we go into our intro. And today he played the faster guy playing Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And singing the song Friday, and I guess that song now is 10 years old, and I open up the AV Club, which I don't really like anymore, but I it's just a habit. And up on it, I see this hot chick, and it says, Friday's over. Rebecca Black's new music is genuinely great. And apparently the girl who sang Friday's name is Rebecca Black.
Mm-hmm.
She's now 23, and she is an outstanding body. I will tell you that much. I have not heard the music, but the idea that anyone... And now this might be the AV Club, because the AV Club is very, 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 very riding the wave of whatever you're supposed to think. So this might be indicative of them feeling bad that as a 13-year-old who wanted to be famous, people put her music down. Let's hear it.
It's Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Well, I guess it's the cigarettes. You know, everyone gets to sneak a cigarette on moving day. Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Wow, far out. Saudi Arabia. Party, yeah. Fun. Ground beef is really a winner nowadays. Yeah.
And if you ever wanted proof... that the faster guy was not homeless, it was that he knew of the words. Like, he brought that up himself.
Yeah.
And he knew the words of the YouTube sensation, Rebecca Black.
Not my favorite.
He would live on a... I think he just lives on a different planet. Like, yes. He would walk into the woods and all of a sudden he would disintegrate and just go somewhere else.
He's Kyrie Irving without the basketball. But there is this funny thing that's going on now is that people that made fun of celebrities are supposed to feel bad. Like... Paris Hilton, like, you're supposed to feel bad, like, if you were, like, making fun of her back in the day. And you're like, okay, well, you wanted to be famous. Like, you were doing everything. You put out the porno. So now you're supposed to feel bad. Like, what are you supposed to feel bad about? She was an adult. She wanted to be famous. She wanted to be famous with no discernible talent. Her whole thing, that was the whole thing. What do you expect everyone to react positively to that? Your whole thing that was this snobby rich girl that was above everyone, and what that's above mockery? That's her whole thing now. Her whole thing now, apparently, is going after people, like finding jokes on YouTube of like Sarah Silverman or something, making fun of her, and then going like, is this fair? And then, yes, it's absolutely fair. You weren't in high school in Des Moines, Iowa. You were on television. That's you're opening yourself up for that. Like, you know, you don't make I didn't make fun of Chelsea Clinton, or I wouldn't make fun of like the president's kid. I didn't make fun of Barron Trump. Like, you know, there's Barron's the kid, right? Like the actual kid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't make fun of Barron Trump. Like, that's not his decision. Like, Barron Trump didn't go, hey, dad, go be the president. So like, I understand that. But if you yourself are actively pursuing fame and fortune, the idea that everyone's going to be super positive of you and everyone else should just shut up is stupid.
Well, you see, I think that the Rebecca Black story is fascinating on another front, and that is that it just goes to show, because I've heard the song and it's good, and she looks great, obviously. It just goes to show that it doesn't matter how talented you are. You get the right people around you, they'll make you look good.
Yep.
They'll make you sound good. They'll write a song for you. All you just go through the pop music car wash, and you can be mediocre in everything, and you'll end up, you could be a star. It's that simple. There's a formula. They know how to do it well, and it's worked for years.
Yeah, there's no magic of getting into a room and having, you know, because like everyone can play blues guitar. I think, Rich, you are good at guitar, so I would imagine you would agree with this, is that you could sit down and teach someone blues, and I hate the blues, but you could sit down and teach someone.
Yeah, it's just a couple chords.
Chords, but there are people that are infinitely more talented at playing it than others because it's some inherent way of thinking or some gift that they have, and a lot of that is lost in the modern day. And I'm not talking about the blues sucks, but I'm talking about just music in general, like with bands and stuff. Well, or yeah, even rap back in the day, like the little mistakes that could happen that would turn into something great. You know, throwaway songs that weren't supposed to be on albums that became classics.
And what's funny, Fred, too, is that every once in a while there's somebody who you legitimately know has real talent, like someone whose voice can rip the shingles off a roof. I think that when I think of, obviously, Adele's an easy one, but someone like Katy Perry. Like, Katy Perry is truly talented. Her voice kills. And so is, like, Lady Gaga. But then, you know, for every one of those, you have somebody that was, like, this pop star who doesn't quite have a great singing voice, but in the studio, they can make them sound as good as you want. You know, they can move things around. And, I mean, I just, you know, I like to even think back in the day, you know, when, like, people like Jessica Simpson were pop stars and stuff. I remember Jessica Simpson. So I worked for a station where Jessica Simpson was a thing. She lived in Dallas when I worked there, and so she was friends with the station. She was always in studio, and she was starting this tour, and they're like, all right, we are going to give you exclusive audio from her live concert. And I was like, okay. And they're like, come to her warm-up before the show starts, and you can record through the board her singing. And so I show up, I'm like, all right. And instead, they gave me something when I showed up and said, oh, here we go, we already recorded it for you. And you could totally tell it was something done in a studio. It wasn't anywhere near anything live like that.
She was so hot, though.
She was very attractive. She was. And her dad was as creepy as you can imagine. Papa Joe was, he was weird.
She
might have been about the size of her breasts and stuff.
She
might have
been the hottest chick on the planet at one time. If she was coming to the studio all the time, I would have to excuse myself and go home, or else I would be in tremendous physical pain. I mean, Jessica Simpson was, oh my God, was she hot. I don't care what they did to her voice. Let her stand on stage. That's all right. That's okay.
Hottest woman on the planet?
For a moment, she might have been the hottest woman on the planet.
Was Nancy Grace still alive at that time?
It was after she had lost weight, though. Give me a nice plump Nancy Grace. Now you're talking. All right. We'll be back in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.